Welcome, everyone. I'm Stefan Bechtold from the Center for Law and Economics at ETH Zurich, and today I'm very happy to welcome Professor Christoph Engel. Professor Engel is a director at the Max Planck Institute for Research on Collective Goods in Bonn, Germany, and he also has recently been affiliated with our center as a distinguished senior research fellow. A warm welcome to Professor Engel.
Many thanks for being so welcomed at ETH Zurich. I'm really looking forward to interacting with you over the years to come.
So today we'll talk about your paper, The German Constitutional Court, Political but Not Partisan. And perhaps to get us started, you could give us a short overview of, you know, what you did in this paper and also what your findings are.
My pleasure. Why might this be an interesting question? Let's perhaps start there. Constitutional courts are legal bodies, but these legal bodies have considerable political power. And the German Constitutional Court is definitely not an exception to that. If you go through the papers just these last days, it has called the illegality of 60 billion to be used by the German government. So it really has clout. The question is therefore almost an obvious one. How do policymakers react to the fact that there is an institution that may change the landscape for them? And that's not a question that's specific to Germany. International observers would probably first think about the states, and they would note just from the papers to which degree the Supreme Court is not only a political body, but is a body that the political forces try to guide into the directions they find good for them. So therefore, the court-watching industry in the US is a big one, and whenever a president has a chance to elect a new justice to the Supreme Court, that changes the landscape potentially for decades. Comparing the US situation to Germany, one sees a lot of similarities. So in Germany, the 16 justices of the Constitutional Court are openly selected by the political parties. It is completely known which justice has been selected by which political party. Therefore, it seems natural to wonder, wouldn't what we see in the US, namely policy making in the sense of the political parties through the Constitutional Court, is something we would also expect in Germany. Now, observers, both political and professional legal, seem to believe that this is not happening in Germany. And the paper is asking, is this casual empiricism, is this impression a correct one, or are they just better at hiding? And for finding that out, you have to have a close eye to the complete jurisprudence. So the possibilities that data analysis these days offers is something that comes to your rescue, so to speak. And this is what the paper essentially does. I look into any ruling that has been made publicly available over more than 20 years now and try to find traces of party politics. And the bottom line is, I can do whatever I want, I don't find anything.
So one of the challenges in conducting these studies is that, in lots of jurisdictions, there is not necessarily random case assignment. And so in the States, my understanding is that the scholarship on the US Supreme Court has also flourished because it was relatively easy to establish causal links between political orientation and outcomes. And so I'm curious how you're doing this in this paper.
Well, this is, of course, the $100 question, and I'm glad ultimately I found more than one option and have a bit of converging evidence pointing into the same direction. So what can you exploit? You need something that's quasi-random, because otherwise it could always be other things that you can't get under control. One thing that's quasi-random at the court is that the chambers who do most of the work are not allowed to decide with less than three justices, but life is complicated. Every now and then the justice who was meant to sit on the chamber is unavailable. And then a replacement justice comes in. And I can exploit that who gives reason to be replaced is something that's not easily plannable. It's not completely watertight, but for the most part you can trust on that. I can do a similar thing in the rare but important cases when the whole Senate of eight decides. The Senate has power to decide with less than eight, and that's for my purposes particularly appealing because they are balanced by design between left and right, always four and four. So whenever one is missing, it's unbalanced and there would be a majority. Do they exploit the fact that all of a sudden they could just decide? And the third thing is a bit more involved, but also quite helpful. The chambers are regularly recomposed. And the moment at which they are recomposed is reasonably predictable because it usually happens if a new justice joins the court. The way how the recomposition happens is close to impossible to predict. Why is that? Well, the court tries to balance in multiple dimensions. So it should never be all three from one side of the political spectrum. It should usually not be all male or all female. It should usually not be all professional justices versus all professors. It should normally not be all newbies. And if you try to combine all of them, then the only way out for the court is typically a complete recomposition of all the chambers, not just an individual chamber. And therefore, I can identify near the recomposition.
So following up on this, I mean, this is, you know, working in a system which is, you know, at least one perspective, this is built on the assumption that it's hard to identify, you know, cause. Mm-hmm. Now, social science, you know, researchers like you come in and actually produce, you know, causal evidence by a clever research design. Do you have any thought on what is the reception in a legal system that's not necessarily built on an interaction with social scientists that produce causal evidence?
This is indeed a very interesting question and something I will have to live through for the years to come. I can disclose the next project I'm working on, which is exploiting some other institutional features that are a bit more complicated to explain, which is why I'm not doing it here, to figure out who was the justice referee. And that is something which clearly is not public. And then I can, for instance, say this justice has done a lot of work, this not so much. Or this justice has been doing very debated cases and the other one does the ordinary work, and so on. Let me see how the justices react to this becoming public.
So I wanted to follow up a bit on this question, you know, whether the German court is as political as the US court or whether it's just better at hiding. Because you employ various methods in order to establish or to go after a potential causal link between political orientation of judges and, you know, the outcome. But when reading the paper, I had the impression that, you know, the ultimate perception of the German judge is that, you know, the judge is a legal automaton. Like, you know, the judge is only applying the law, doesn't act in any kind of strategic sense, doesn't think about what the implications of his decision or her decision on, you know, future appointments in chambers are. And so to some extent, you know, the paper leaves the impression of this ideal version of the judge, how the judge should actually behave. And so I'm wondering, you know, to what extent you think that in the study you can actually confirm that vision, or to what extent may there be other factors that, you know, are just impossible to control, you know, culture, you know, behavior that you don't see in the data?
That's, of course, a very important question, and I would have a nuanced response. So there's no doubt that the Constitutional Court is political and wants to be a political body. The question is whether the court also, or where individual justices within the court, that's a better way of putting it, would also want to fight for their partisan cause whenever they can. I would not only say impression, but would argue finding is that the former, yes, quite clearly, the latter, no. And now you can ask why. And there is at least three lines of interpretation. And with my data, I can't tell them apart. I can only say there's alternative ways of rationalizing what we find. So one within the framework of everybody pleads their cause would be the justices collectively understand that they are much more influential if they are not taken to be partisan. So it could just be a public good within a small community has the ability to maintain the public good. The second interpretation would be that the German legal culture is, of course, legalistic and is very different from the US legal culture. And it might be that from day one on of their legal training, they have been told a judge is not a policymaker, might influence how they do it. And the third is, of course, institutional detail. So the most important one being is, yes, every individual justice is picked by a political party, but the rule is that every individual justice needs a majority of 2/3. And therefore, the gentleman agreement is, we let you pick yours and we expect you to let us pick ours, but only if we think the persons you pick are not radical. And there have been instances, not many, where people have been proposed and then the other side said, no way. And then that was the end of that story.
So to what extent could a project like this turned into a, you know, constitutional consultancy project? Like, you know, the question how political a constitutional court is or should be is, of course, of high importance in many different countries, in the States, but also in European countries and also on other continents. And so I'm wondering to what extent findings from a study like this can inform us also, you know, when it comes to providing policy advice in potentially other countries.
In principle, of course, yes. Whenever we do comparisons, one of the reasons why we do them is that someone who has a different institutional framework or none would like to learn. On the other hand, the historical legacy. So I think many observers in the US would love to have the German system, but I see no way to go there. In a country that has less of a tradition in this respect and wonders which is the better framework, for them there might be a story to tell and they might not directly copy, but they might get influenced by comparing things that seem to work with things like the US that clearly don't work.
Do you think this, you know, difference that you point to between United States, you know, Supreme Court and the German Constitutional Court has also something to do with, you know, civil versus common law? Is there something, you know, broader one could tell about, you know, that this may not only be a distinct feature of, you know, the German constitutional courts, but of other constitutional courts in civil law countries?
I would be cautious about civil versus common law, and I would rather say it's about legal realism. So the thinking within good US law schools is, come on, this doctrine is just all chimera. And of course, those who don't do constitutional law, but other parts of law would qualify that and would say doctrine has something to say. But in the end of the day, they want to solve the social conflict. And in countries like Germany, they also want to solve the social conflict, but within the constraints of a thick institutional framework that's partly explicit institutions and partly informal institutions, which leads to a very different legal culture.
So thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts on this paper. As a final question, I wanted to touch upon that, you know, the Center for Law and Economics and you recently entered into a closer collaboration that will hopefully, you know, carry us through for the next few years in terms of teaching and also mentoring the next generation of researchers. And I was just wondering whether you have any thoughts on what we could jointly achieve in such a collaboration.
I hope a lot. I'm really looking forward to that. One of the presently very hot topics where I think our different strengths could wonderfully interact is the emerging field of artificial intelligence and how it interacts with the law. Be it that it poses problems for the law that the law is meant to solve, be it that it offers alternative ways of going about the problems the law wants to solve. So do we want to make the law, the implementation of legal rules more effective by leveraging the power of AI? And not the least, the outside perspective of a legal researcher that becomes so much more powerful if we can build on the techniques of, say, natural language processing to make meaningful and, in the end of the day, also identifiable statements about, say, judicial politics or other bodies of documents that the legal system produces.
Thank you very much, Professor Engel, for being with us today and for sharing your thoughts on your recent paper. And we are very much looking forward to our future interactions at the Center. And to our vlog viewers, we hope you enjoyed the episode as much as we did and hope to see you soon again.